Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. This is your advanced class, and we are doing the second day on chilling out in Iceland. And I know you want to stay tuned as we talk about this interesting island. So this is where we are going to start today with Bill.
Hello.
Amanda.
And Lois.
And Doris. So, how are you all today?
Great. Glad to be here.
Very good.
Are you ready for our continuing trip in Iceland, Bill?
Yeah, I certainly am, Doris. This is really interesting reading about this place that we don't hear much about on the news.
And we're glad that Amanda can be with us because she is from New Zealand. And as we talk about this, does this remind you a little bit of New Zealand?
It really does. It really does. Just the different things that they have there and the scenery that they have there do remind me of home.
Do you have a lot of hospitality down there?
Yeah. Tourism is actually one of the largest, well, the number one industry we have in New Zealand.
I've been to New Zealand a couple times, and I like it down there. It's really nice. They have warm hospitality there.
Thank you.
And I think it's nice to know that there are many places in the world we need to discover, so don't always just go to New York and Los Angeles. I mean, take a trip and go someplace else.
I think so, too, Doris, and I think they should just go to Seattle for a few days and then hop on an airplane, head over to Europe, and stop in Iceland on the way.
Pass Canada right up and go
right over. Canada right over. Yeah, they can go there on another trip.
Yeah, okay, another time. Go to Vancouver next time,
yeah,
right?
Or a different city.
That's right. But, you know, it is interesting to find out about these places. And, Bill, yesterday, what were some of the main things that we mentioned about Iceland that would be good for everybody to remember?
Well, certainly that Iceland is one of the happiest places that I see there in line 12 and 13 in the right column on page 28. That came from writer Eric Weiner, who wrote The Geography of Bliss.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people there are happy, and there's very good reasons for that. He actually traveled around the globe to study different places, and I was just reviewing some of the information about his book, and he identified the people of Iceland as some of the happiest people on Earth. Biggest reason, he said, is that they just their life is relatively stress-free. That's a common theme in the places he identified as happy.
How stressful is it?
Are not major metropolitan areas with 10 million people. People don't have two-hour commutes to work. And they're not dealing with traffic and pollution and too many people in a small place.
Bill, remember they said it's a walkable town instead of a big cosmopolitan capital. Doesn't that sound good to you, Amanda?
It does. And I especially liked the quaint seafront and the houses with the different colored roofs. I think that would be really lovely to just walk along there with the fresh air and just spend some time.
That reminds me of Norway and Sweden. They're the same that way.
Reminds me of Vancouver Island. What they're talking about here totally
getting
reminds me of
Vancouver Canada
Island.
Getting back to Canada again there.
I know. I got the crowd going there now, Doris.
All right. But we got to get back over here to this Sweden and Norway and Finland, and farther north is Iceland. But is it all full of ice over there or not?
All full of ice? Not at all. Look at the pictures that we have. You see all the greenery, the flowers and the trees.
Right. Beautiful. And, of course, the snow on the mountains in the distance, but it's down by the ocean. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing is not just covered with ice. You can go up and do the ice, but you can also have a nice moderate temperature
in
the cities.
Yeah, right? The population lives where the grass grows.
Mm-hmm. Well, where are we going to start today, Bill?
Well, actually, today we're going to be talking about the cost of living there in Iceland. And, you know, there's a lot of positives about being in Iceland, but one of the catches is it can be a fairly expensive place to live. And so we'll examine that today.
Well, you know, they say that about every place right now. Every place. It's expensive in Tokyo, expensive in Hawaii, expensive every place. So I don't think we can find a lot of really cheap places anymore.
Well, you have to actually, you need to live somewhere for a while to learn the secrets. You have to learn the ins and outs and, you know, become part of the local crowd. Then you can figure out, okay, how do I live here economically? But for our visitor, you know, Carol Pucci, she experienced typical tourist prices.
Well, that's true. So let's look at page 29 and read the first section, which is the high cost of living.
High cost of living. As they say in Iceland, Etta told us as she cranked up the registers in our room, the only thing cheap is the heat. Most everything except fish, sheep, and energy, geothermal power plants heat most of the homes and buildings, has to be imported. When a banking crisis in 2008 brought the country to the brink of bankruptcy, the value of the Icelandic krona tumbled to half what it was against the U.S. dollar, making a visit here feel less like sticker shock, but still pricey. Our room was an off-season bargain at $94, including Etta's big breakfast, a welcome extra considering the price of granola, fruit, yogurt, and coffee for two at a local cafe was $30.
Okay, first here, Doris, we see, as they say in Iceland, Etta is the innkeeper we met yesterday, told us as she cranked up the registers in our room. I'm going to stop there before I continue on this sentence. Cranked up, that vocab focus term just means to increase something and actually to make something perform, turn it on. I think of cranking up the engine of my car.
Well, I think about when I've been in England, it's very cold, and they don't always have all these heat registers in all the rooms, and they don't crank them up. It's kind of cold. But at least in Iceland, they turn it on. And I found that was true in some of the places like Finland. Even when it's very cold there, the rooms are warmer. But you might go to places in England where they don't have these warm registers in the room, and you're kind of cold.
Yeah. But if you come to my parents' house in Canada, Doris, they always have their heat cranked up.
They have it cranked up. So that means it's turned up high, right?
It's way too hot.
But, you know, evidently the heat isn't that expensive because, as they said, the only thing that's cheap is the heat. Well, that's good because they might need that, right?
That's right. And maybe that's why in England you didn't feel the heat so much. But here they do have cheap heat so you can stay nice and cozy inside.
Well, and the reason, of course, that things are expensive there is because so many things have to be imported. And any time when you live in a place where you have to import outside things, it's going to cost more.
That's correct, Doris. And that's what I found when you mentioned it before about Hawaii. A lot of things that have to be had for you in Hawaii have to be brought in from the mainland of the United States.
Lots of islands. Lots of islands are like that.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And so then this second paragraph here, this section, Doris, we learn why the heat is so cheap. It's because geothermal power plants do most of the heating, take care of most of the heating there in Iceland. And actually, these are interesting power plants, geothermal. They're produced by heat inside the earth. They actually have turbines that are driven by the heat and the steam that comes from the hot springs underneath the surface in Iceland. So these turbines actually then create the power.
Right. And so this is what really makes the volcanoes and so all that, this heat with inside the earth. Mm-hmm. And they can harness that power. They can use it. So that's good, isn't it?
It's excellent, Doris. And what our readers might not know is they have been doing this for decades. Mm-hmm. And they've been trying to teach the rest of the world. And the rest of the world still won't jump on board of this. And it is just such a wonderful idea to use what's in the earth to heat your buildings and your factories and whatever.
Now, of course, other things they do have fish there because they're by the ocean, and they have sheep. That sounds like New Zealand, too. Mm-hmm. Lots of sheep down there and other things like that. But some of the things that they have to be imported, probably some equipment, and I'm not sure what that would be.
Well, okay.
Maybe fruit. Fruit has to be imported.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking, Doris. Okay, you got fish, sheep, and energy but that are there and cheap, but on a daily basis, there's a couple other key staples. Fruits and vegetables are all going to be imported.
Flour.
A lot of your food substances are going to be, because of the importation, it's going to be probably double in price. And then also energy is going to be costing a lot, too. I bet their gasoline prices are pretty high in Iceland.
Well, all over Europe.
Yeah.
Well, I know when we were in Norway and Sweden, things like bananas and things like that, they were delicacies that you didn't eat them all the time. They were like dessert. You'd have a banana because it came from Panama or someplace. They don't have those kind of things. So certain things that are not grown there would cost more.
Right. The only thing they're really growing there fruit-wise, would be berries that we all like, but that's what they would grow.
Right.
But they wouldn't be growing any citrus fruit or anything like that. You're right, Doris.
Mm. So it depends on, you know, how you eat, what you do like that. But it tells you here a little bit about this banking crisis that they had. What happened at that time, Amanda? And that was in line 7.
Well, it happened in 2008, and it brought the country to the brink of bankruptcy. So they came very close to being bankrupt as a nation. And so their krona, which is the Icelandic dollar, it fell to half. It tumbled to half its value against the U.S. dollar, which is not good for them in Iceland, but it is good for the tourist.
Yeah, well, why don't they talk about the sticker shock? Can you mention that, Bill, what that means here?
That's a funny term, sticker shock. Normally, we have sticker shock when we go into a car dealership, or we go to buy some other new item, but especially car dealers, we like a car. We go, wow, that's really nice, and I want that. And then we actually go look. There's a price list. There's a sticker in the window. That's where this term comes from. And we look at that sticker, and we're like, oh! So that's sticker shock. We are shocked by how expensive something is.
The price is listed on it, right?
Yeah.
That's all
that's
that
right.
really means, right? But, you know, as far as where they were staying, they said their room was an off-season bargain. And I think it's good to go some places off-season. If you go during the peak season, then things are more expensive.
That's right.
The plane is more expensive, the room and everything. But if you go at the off-season, it's cheaper. So their room was $94, including breakfast. Which is, and nowadays prices isn't too much, really.
No, that's two people in a room, Doris. That's a very reasonable price.
For present day.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and they had granola and fruit and yogurt and coffee and all that. And all that is about $30. So it seems kind of average for travelers, I guess.
Well, this last part of this sentence is what makes this such a bargain there at Guesthouse Eric the Red. Because the breakfast, if they had to eat outside, would be $30.
Right.
That actually, if you do the math here, then what our writer is saying is actually the cost of the room was $64, which is really very good because they would have spent so much money on breakfast.
And that is true. When you stay some places, they will serve breakfast, and it does make it cheaper that way than if you have to buy your breakfast.
Yeah. Sometimes my sister and I will go away, and we like the bed and breakfast or the inn, Doris, where the breakfast is included in the room.
Right.
It's a nice feature, and you get to know the host better, and they get to know you better.
I've noticed lately this past few months because of the way money and things are tight that places that used to serve breakfast, they don't do it now anymore. So just like the airplanes, they're not giving you what they used to. So that's still a bargain there now, right?
Well, I think, and you had mentioned just a few minutes ago, why off-season would be such a bargain. The rooms are going to be at a bargain price. And then also I think that's why Iceland Air had that great price from Seattle, the $650. It's November, December. Winter time, so they're just trying to increase their traffic.
So the high cost of living isn't that high. It's high, but not really much higher than a lot of places that you go in the world nowadays.
Now you can find bargains there.
Right. But let's find out about the cultural quirks. Now, what is a quirk, Lois?
Okay, a quirk is what's unique to them and what we might find a little different, Doris, to what we're kind of used to. And we might think it's a little strange.
Well, like people that might come to Asia find eating with chopsticks a cultural quirk because they can't do it, you know.
Yeah,
so it's something that's a little different than what you're used
exactly.
to.
Exactly.
Well, let's find out what their cultural quirks are.
Cultural quirks. Talking together around the dining room table, we learned about some of the cultural quirks that come with living in a country whose closest neighbor is Greenland. Television? For years, it was unavailable on Thursdays and in July when the station crews were off work. Iceland has a population of only 300,000. Until the economic crisis hit, there were more jobs than workers to fill them, and no one to fill in on vacations.
One thing about staying in these guest houses, you get to talk to people. It's not like a hotel where the people don't really talk to you too much. And they get to talk around the dining room table, and they found out some of the local things that seem different.
Right, and some of the local things that seem different, we call them cultural quirks here. And It's interesting is that they share a lot of things, too, some of these cultural quirks with their neighbor, Greenland, also, and they're islands, so certainly they're going to have quirks.
Well, they live in a country whose closest neighbor is Greenland, and that's not that close, so they're not very close to anybody, are they?
No, but, you know, it's interesting, Doris, when we read this article and the television not being unavailable for many years on Thursdays. Do you know, I think that would do the world good not to have television available for one day in
weekend,
a week.
Right?
Like, it would be great.
How about an hour? Let's start with an hour. That would be a major breakthrough.
But, you know, it says here, though, in July when the station crews were off work, that happened. See, that's in July. And actually, almost any place in Scandinavia, if you're in Norway or Sweden and you want to do something, you go to some shop. It'll be a butcher shop or a bakery, and there'll be a sign on the door, off, closed for July. They go to Spain or someplace. It's too cold up there. And they just go away for a month. And that's what they do in those northern countries. So that's why the station crews are off work. They're off for July. Don't try to go there and see people in July. They will be down in Spain.
It's kind of my experience when I first came to Asia with Lunar New Year, and everything closed down, and nobody told me that.
But you think about this. Iceland has a very small population, doesn't it?
That's right. Only 300,000 people. So you can see why, you know, they have this ability to take a break. But also, you know, because the population is so small, the jobs are less, and maybe it's their way of surviving.
I don't know, but 300,000 people. Why, there's, you know, cities that we know that we live in that have got 1 million or 2 million people in them, and you think the whole country only has 300,000 people. How can that be a country? But it is, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. Only 300,000 people. And then we learn more about this now when we see until the economic crisis hit, and that is referring back to that banking crisis in 2008.
Yes.
Before then, there were more jobs than workers to fill them, so things were going pretty well.
Right.
And because things were going so well, they had an interesting problem. There was nobody left over to fill in when people went on vacations.
So they just put a sign on the door.
Yeah.
Off fishing, closing for July, and this has happened a lot in that area. What about down in New Zealand? Do they do anything like that?
No, not anymore. I'm sure they did that back, you know, in history, but no, we have 4 million people, Dar, so a little bit more than 300,000.
Got 4 million down there.
You know, maybe in the countryside.
Yes.
Right.
Because people like to, in a way, it's a good idea because everybody's gone at the same time and you don't have to worry about it. But for people visiting, it's not so good, is it?
No, you have to find out those times are going to be off, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, we'll find out where to go and what time, and there are some websites that we can look at. But let's read about the hot pots first.
Hot pots. Within an hour's drive of Reykjavik is a landscape filled with hot springs, geysers, waterfalls, and fields of black lava rock, all carved by the same geological forces that triggered the 2010 eruption of the Eyjafjallajökull volcano. Iceland sits atop the boundary of the North American and Eurasian tectonic plates, making it a literal hotbed of volcanic and geothermal activity. A cold weather treat is going for a soak in one of the steaming, sulfur-scented outdoor public pools called hot pots.
Okay, hot pots. That sounds like something in Asia, a place where we go to eat hot pots. But, you know, we like a hot pot because that's fun to eat. But what are they talking about, hot
pots?
We're
not talking about shabu-shabu here, Doris. We're talking about some natural hot pots that are within an hour's drive of Reykjavik, and it is a landscape that is filled with these hot springs and geysers. And we talked about the geothermal heat production, and actually there's this heat underneath the crust there, very close to the surface in Iceland, and so that's why they have these hot pots.
When they have waterfalls, and that's beautiful, and fields of this black lava rock that came from the volcanoes exploding, right?
That's right, and I'm not going to pronounce this volcano. They can go back to the reading.
don't you even want to try that? Egypt falls a lot for cool.
Anyway, oh, very good.
You could say whatever you think, but the cool at the end probably is right. Mm. Anyway, but that is quite a name for volcano, and I'd hate to have to spell that in a spelling contest. How many L's and J's, boy?
I can sure remember it being on the news. I was watching the news, and all the newscasters would pass it on to the next person to pronounce. So I thought, oh, well, I don't feel so bad. I can't say it either.
Yeah.
That is, that's quite an effect it had on Europe, because it affected all of Europe. There was a huge cloud that went over Europe, and what it did is it shut down air travel because there are particles within this volcanic cloud that actually clog up jet engines, and so it shut down air travel for weeks.
I remember my husband couldn't fly in that part of the world at all.
Right. Yeah. But I can, as you say, the newscasters probably had a hard time saying what the name of the volcano was. The volcano up there in Iceland.
Exactly. Actually, you can see that on Google, on YouTube, and it's pretty funny. If our listeners want to kind of go and YouTube, it's very funny.
But it tells us more about Iceland here. And it says it sits atop the boundary of the North American and Eurasian tectonic plates.
Right, and the tectonic plates are actually, you click on our specialized terms box there, a large thin section of land that moves relative to others like it on the outer surface of the Earth. And, of course, this is what causes earthquakes, the
so
movement
it's
of the tectonic
plates. It's a hotbed for that. Means that it's where a lot of that goes on. So the volcanic and geothermal activity is there. Like you said, Bill, that's where they can use that and harness that. But still, it can be dangerous, too.
That's right.
Yeah. And I like this next term that they use there. It's a kind of a play on words, a literal hotbed of volcanic and geothermal activity.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it is a play on words. We see in our vocabulary focus a place or situation where a lot of a particular activity is happening or might happen. We might say that it's a hotbed of activity down at an amusement park that's just opened.
Well, you could say it's a hotbed of something, too, if there's a lot of crime and there's, you know, it can be used in different ways. There's a lot going on there, really.
Right? Yeah, yeah. I just like that, the combination hotbed and volcanic. So,
but a cold weather treat, when it's really cold, what can you do?
Well, you can stay in these hot pots. You don't want to be in the hotbed. You want to be in these hot pots because in the cold weather, you can soak in one of the steaming, sulfur-scented outdoor public pools called hot pots.
Now, this sulfur-scented, we have a lot of those in different parts of Asia. I know in Taiwan we have these too, the sulfur. And that doesn't always smell that good, I don't think.
Yeah, we have them in New Zealand, too.
Yeah, I mean,
it smells like rotten eggs.
Yeah, they don't smell very good, you know. But I guess they're supposed to be good for you. But they have outdoor public pools, and they call them the hot pots.
That's right.
I think we have a little skit right now about this.
Let's chill!
What? I am already chillin', or should I say, I am chilly and need some hot chili.
Ah, Elaine, that is a funny one! Are you not enjoying our time in Iceland?
Sure I am. I just didn't know how much the cold could kick up here, even though the sun is shining ever so brightly.
Yes, that is what happens here, Elaine. Even though you are here in the capital of Reykjavik, well, the buildings aren't really shielding us from the cold and blasts of wind.
I do like this place, and it certainly is quaint.
Yes, very different than anything I have seen before. With the houses sheathed in colorful corrugated steel, wow, what great colors some of these houses have.
I think it really brightens up the place, especially when they have so little sunlight in the dark winter months.
So much warm hospitality to make up for the cold here, though. Don't you think, Elaine?
That certainly has been our experience, Keith. I would come back here just for the hospitality and the comforts of the places we've been staying in.
Yes, they just want to make you feel so comfortable. I especially like that they are ready for you when you arrive to your room. Those registers being cranked up so you feel the warmth and the comfort. Gosh, you don't want to leave your room.
I certainly see how the benefits of geothermal power on this island make it possible to crank up that heat. No wonder people can be quite comfortable living here, eh?
Yes. I guess basically not having much of a heating bill, well, it helps with the sticker shock price of some items that they must import here. And that is quite a few.
Keith, let's not spoil our time here by thinking about the cost of everything. We're having a great time, and we couldn't have asked for a better airfare price to get here.
Elaine, you are so right. Thanks for the reminder. Yep, just going to enjoy my time now. Hey, please pass me another herring.
Okay, well, that was interesting to learn about the hot pots here, Doris. I believe that's a picture of our writer, Carol Pucci, and her husband enjoying hot pot there. If you look at the picture there on page 29, that couple there soaking in water that's almost up to their neck there and enjoying the sulfur smell.
When you notice if you want to do any of these things, they're about an hour's drive away. And this is what's true like in places like Vancouver in Canada and Seattle. You can be down in the city in the waterfront, but then another hour you can be up in the mountains.
That's right.
And we kind of like that because you're close to the mountains, but you don't live in them. And I think that's the way that people feel there, don't you?
Yeah, I think that they get the best of both worlds.
Right.
And, you know, for our listeners, Doris, the great news is that their English is literally their second language there because, of course, they have their own Icelandic language, but then English is their second language, and most of the residents actually speak very good English, very clear, incredibly clear English. So if our advanced listeners are good and confident with their English, then you'll have no problem getting around Iceland.
We'll find out more about it as we finish this article. We'll review it. We'll think about it more. But I think it's a place that a lot of you might enjoy stopping over and visiting. So consider it. Check out the websites and be sure to be here tomorrow as we finish this article. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.